keep on making the payments for my child's college tuition. What am I going to do exactly? Now, I could have enjoyed the battle with Republicans over the next month or two, because, as I said, the American people are on our side. This is not a situation in which I have failed to persuade the American people of the rightness of our position. I know the polls. The polls are on our side on this. We weren't operating from a position of political weakness with respect to public opinion. The problem is that Republicans feel that this is the single most important thing that they have to fight for as a party. And in light of that, it was going to be a protracted battle, and they would have a stronger position next year than they do currently. So, another way of thinking about it is that if we had made a determination that the deal was a permanent tax break for high-income individuals in exchange for these short-term things that people need right now, that would have been unacceptable. And the reason is because you would be looking at $700 billion that would be added to the deficit with very little on the short term that would help to offset that. The deal that we've struck here makes the high-end tax cuts temporary. And that gives us the time to have this political battle without having the same casualties for the American people that are my number one concern.
If I may follow, aren't you telegraphing, though, a negotiating strategy of how the Republicans can beat you in negotiations all the way through the next year, because they can just stick to their guns, stay united, be unwilling to budge, to use your words, and force you to capitulate?
I don't think so, and the reason is because this is a very unique circumstance. This is a situation in which tens of millions of people would be directly damaged and immediately damaged, and at a time when the economy is just about to recover. Now, keep in mind, I've just gone through 2 years, Chuck, where the rap on me was I was too stubborn and wasn't willing to budge on a whole bunch of issues, including, by the way, health care, where everybody here was writing about how, despite public opinion and despite this and despite that, somehow the guy's going to bulldoze his way through this thing. But that's my point. My point is I don't make judgments based on what the conventional wisdom is at any given time. I make my judgments based on what I think is right for the country and for the American people right now. I will be happy to see the Republicans test whether or not I'm itching for a fight on a whole range of issues. I suspect they will find I am. And I think the American people will be on my side on a whole bunch of these fights. But right now, I want to make sure that the American people aren't hurt because we're having a political fight. And I think that this agreement accomplishes that. And, as I said, there are a whole bunch of things that they are giving up. I mean, the truth of the matter is, from the Republican perspective, the earned income tax credit, the college tuition tax credit, the child tax credit, all those things that are so important for so many families across the country, those are things they really opposed. And so temporarily, they are willing to go along with that, presumably because they think they can beat me on that over the course of the next 2 years. And I'm happy to have that battle. I'm happy to have that conversation. I just want to make sure that the American people aren't harmed while we're having that broader argument. Scott Horsley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Last week, the members of your administration were boasting about your willingness to walk away from the Korean negotiations led to a better deal. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how this situation differs?
The difference is that if I didn't get the Korea deal done on January 1st, the taxes of the middle class America wouldn't go up. That's pretty straightforward. If we didn't get the Korea deal done by January 1st, 2 million people weren't suddenly looking at having no way to support their families. And that's why, you know, this goes to Chuck's question as well about what's going to be different in the future. I mean, you've got a situation here that was urgent for millions of people. But as I recall, with the Korea Free Trade Agreement, that was deemed by conventional wisdom as an example of us not getting something done. I remember a story above the fold on that. Then when we got it done with a better deal that is has the endorsement of not only of the U.S. auto companies, but also of labor, the story was sort of below the fold. So I would just point that out. I am happy to be tested over the next several months about our ability to negotiate with Republicans.
Having bought that time now, do you hope to use this two-year window to push for a broader overhaul of the tax code?
Yes. And the answer is yes. I mean, part of what I want to do is to essentially get the American people in a safe place so that we can then get the economy in a stable place. And then we're going to have a broad-based discussion across the country about our priorities. And I started doing that yesterday down in North Carolina. Here's going to be the long-term issue. We've had 2 years of emergency economic action on the banking industry, the auto industry, on unemployment insurance, on a whole range of issues, on state budgets. The situation is now stabilized, although for those folks who are out of work, it's still an emergency. So we've still got to focus short-term on job growth. But we've got to have a larger debate about how is this country going to win the economic competition of the 21st century? How are we going to make sure that we've got the best trained workers in the world? There was just a study that came out today showing how we've slipped even further when it comes to math education and science education. So what are we doing to revamp our schools to make sure our kids can compete? What are we doing in terms of research and development to make sure that innovation is still taking place here in the United States of America? What are we doing about our infrastructure so that we have the best airports and the best roads and the best bridges? And how are we going to pay for all that at a time when we've got both short-term deficit problems, medium-term deficit problems, and long-term deficit problems? Now, that's going to be a big debate, and it's going to involve us sorting out what government functions are adding to our competitiveness and increasing opportunity and making sure that we're growing the economy, and which aspects of the government aren't helping. And then we've got to figure out how do we pay for that. And that's going to mean, you know, looking at the tax code and saying, you know, what's fair, what's efficient. And I don't think anybody thinks the tax code right now is fair or efficient. But we've got to make sure that we don't just paper over those problems by borrowing from China or Saudi Arabia. And so that's going to be a major conversation. And in that context, I don't see how the Republicans win that argument. I don't know how they are going to be able to argue that extending permanently these high-end tax cuts is going to be good for our economy when, to offset them, we'd end up having to cut vital services for our kids, for our veterans, for our seniors. But I'm happy to listen to their arguments, and you know, I think the American people will benefit from that debate, and that's going to be starting next year. Mark Amender.
Thank you. How do these negotiations affect negotiations or talks with Republicans about raising the debt limit? Because it would seem that they have a significant amount of leverage over the White House now. Going in, was there ever any attempt by the White House to include the raising the debt limit as part of this package?
When you say that it would seem they'll have a significant amount of leverage over the White House, what do you mean?
Just in the sense that you know, they'll say essentially we're not going to raise we're not going to agree to it unless the, you know, White House is able to or willing to agree to significant spending cuts across the board that probably go deeper and further than what you're willing to do.
Well,
what leverage would you have?
Look, here's my expectation, and I'll take John Boehner at his word, that nobody, Democrat or Republican, is willing to see the full faith and credit of the United States government